Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and I apologize for the delay. We had a few technical issues. We are here with Sean and Marianne Donnelly from PanicCD.com and Our Haunted Travels. Welcome, guys. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, can't complain. I apologize for the technical issues, but you know how technology is these days. It either works or it doesn't most of the time.
My saying and philosophy is technology is the devil.
It can't be many days, I'll tell you, definitely. So, gosh, you guys have done quite a lot according to the history that we picked up on. I mean, you went to over 800 locations across the United States investigating paranormal claims and taking a look at things. You've covered folklore stories, a lot of different things. So I guess let's just start from the beginning on what got you into the paranormal.
Marianne, do you want to take that? You haven't even said anything.
I know. Well, first of all, the database has over 800 locations in it, but we've only been to about 200 in some of those locations. The other ones, we just have claims from other individuals, and we haven't investigated. As far as how we got started, that was a accident.
Yeah.
We had gone down to Florida for our honeymoon. We had gone to St. Augustine, and we went ahead and went back a few years later. And so we were trying to do things a little differently. So I found this, evening lighthouse tour, and I'm like, ooh, we could go to the lighthouse, but at night, sweetheart, you know? So I booked us these things. It was like Howl at the Moon or Night of the Moon or something like that.
Dark of the Moon.
Dark of the Moon. And when we got there, they were passing out for an extra couple dollars.
Yeah, for an extra $5, you could get this device that will help you detect ghosts. And I'm like, yeah, really? I'm not, you already got enough of our money. I ain't paying any more money. But, yeah, turns out I turned down a K2 meter at St. Augustine Lighthouse, one of the most haunted lighthouses in the United States. But anyways, go ahead. Didn't mean to interrupt.
But that's okay. So we did that. And along the tour, they were telling us about these, like, weird things that happen there and these footprints that show up out of nowhere and the smoking and everything that you can smell and there's nobody around. And we're like, that's kind of interesting stuff because they tied it to historical events and it was really cool. And we're like, that's awesome. The next night we had an event that I said, hey, let's just go to this one too. It was over at the old military hospital, the Spanish military hospital, and then a walking tour through the town. And
again at night,
different look to St. Augustine is basically what we were doing because we had gone there about 4 years before that. And, we caught an orb, and the little tour guide, he was like, oh, yeah, you caught something. That's really cool, you know, and that's where it all began.
Yeah, that started it. That got us hooked. So we've been doing it ever since. 2010, any chance we get, we go out, and we either try to find a new location or research more history or dig into it deeper and try to figure things out as, you know, why things are happening and things like that. So that's how it started.
It's amazing how, and everybody has a unique story when they're starting into the paranormal. It either happens as a kid or you stumble across it. And you mentioned one thing that's actually quite fascinating. It in its own way, once you start to look, this is a terrible way of saying it, but it's the easiest way to say it. So I know you guys can relate with it, even though it's not the way it's meant. It becomes an addiction.
You're right. It does. You just want to find out more, or you find something that's quite interesting, or when you hear, you know, we get reports from all over the country of several people that just tell us about different things. And when you dig into it and you get tied to something historically that's documented or other reports of other people, and that's the same. That's what interests us. Like, big time. And then it gets to the point where, okay, we got to go there. We got to go see what we find out, you know, or maybe go to the local library or something like that to dig up more stuff. So, yeah, it is addictive. I agree with you. And, it, you know, if you don't watch, it could be kind of expensive, but
it can definitely be expensive. I think in the past year alone, not counting the conventions and not counting the conferences I've went to, I've probably spent $5,000 to $11,000 on the equipment, the travel, the overnights, and it adds up pretty quickly.
Oh yeah, it does.
That it does.
We just got back Monday from a week in Gettysburg, and yeah, you know, that it adds up. So.
Gettysburg is a beautiful place. I haven't visited there, gosh, in at least 8 years, but I'd love to go back eventually. I didn't get a chance to investigate it. I was there on a tour at the time, and unfortunately didn't get enough time to spend there because I had so much else to do, but I've always wanted to go there and spend maybe 2 or 3 days just digging in.
Yeah, we were there for a week, so... That kind of tells you, and it was our third time there. So, you know, we just kept one of our main goals, since now we have the YouTube channel, is we wanted to go back to these different locations and get B-roll footage from when we go to do the videos. But, man, we found, I don't know, at least, I'm going to say maybe 16 new different locations and stories just that we didn't hear of. Just on this past trip, there's so much there. It's just, it keeps going and going and going. And it's not just the battlefield. It's the stories of the town people and things like that. It's just so interesting.
Oh yeah. There's a phenomenal amount of history there. It's it dates back way past the Civil War to early settlers, and just an amazing bunch of stuff that I've heard from Gettysburg. It, you guys have probably heard twice as much as me, to be frankly honest, because you spent more time there. But you brought up something that's very truthful, though. There are different segments to the paranormal. See, I've spent a lot of my life in the scientific end, which a lot of people tend to contest, but it's all about collecting data and information, and it's broken down into some unusual situations that most people don't know about. One is the historic end, which pieces together everything else. You have to know the history, you have to know the background, you have to be able to do the research, and you have to be able to put these things together properly. If you can't, then it doesn't matter how scientific I get, I'm not going to have the answers that I need. It's a proportional thing, studying the paranormal. I think a lot of people just assume it's going out there with cameras and gadgets, so to speak, and then, hey, we're hunting ghosts. But if you really dive into it, it takes a lot more work than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it depends. I don't know. You know, just the way we approach it, since we have the database, we have the PanicD.com database, you know, there are those out there. We look at it three different ways when it comes to spirits and entities and stuff like that, because the term paranormal could branch out to cryptozoology and UFOs and stuff like that. But we mainly look at the spirits and hauntings and things like that as far as paranormal. But and this is just our personal terminology, but the way we look at things. There's those who are like ghost hunters that just go out for the thrill of it. There are those who are investigators that go and do the investigations, collecting information and stuff like that. And then there are the researchers that's an investigator and somebody that digs into the history to try to find the true, what could be causing the haunting. And we tend to fall into that latter category because our background actually is in education. I'm the IT director for a school district, and Marianne's a biology and forensic science teacher. So, you know, we do take the scientific approach as well, but we love history. We probably missed our calling. We should have been history teachers, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's why we love the channel, is because basically we're putting out history and we're putting the haunting stuff on it. you know, sometimes that attracts people so that they come in and say, ooh, haunting, you know, whatever. And then they learn something, you know. So that's how we're approaching it with our haunted travels.
No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I would add actually a fourth category to what you're saying there, because I come from old school. I started with the International Paranormal Research Society, which is no longer here. They haven't been here for over 23 years. I was a puppy when I went in there, and there were a bunch of scientists in there. So trust me, it was way over my head. In fact, the first time we were out there, and I won't get into detail about that. I said, they were talking this stuff. I'm like, guys, I don't understand a word you're saying. So they said, okay, take a notepad, go over there, ask these questions. That's all we want you to do. Okay, I can do that. but the science is, it applies. It just doesn't apply the way most people think today, which is why there's so many debates. In the early days, paranormal science was more researching the possibilities that link to the rest of it. If you've got a ghost, what defines a ghost? What is a ghost? What type of energy is it? What type of situation is it? Is it coming from the mind? Is it coming from something else? Can we be able to gauge this? Can we be able to collect the data from it? And there are still people out there that do that study. It's just most investigators, I think, don't see that a lot of times. I get a chance because I spend time with the universities, but most people don't get a chance to see that a lot of times. They get to see just, like you're saying, just going out there for the thrill seeking, as opposed to collecting the history, digging in deep, trying to find the connections to the situations, and then trying to explain those connections.
Right.
You guys are amazing people, actually. I haven't had a chance to watch a lot of your YouTube yet. I spent some time on it today, and I apologize. I wanted to spend some more time on it throughout the week, but it's been busy. I had two servers drop on me, so I had to figure out how to rebuild these servers in order to make sure that I had my connection still available. But let's talk about some of the locations you've been, some of the aspects that you do when you're out there in the field, and kind of apply your method, so to speak, so that the audience can kind of get a feel for a little bit more of what you're talking about.
Well, most of the time when we go to a location, like we said, we've been to, well, it's over 200 now, okay? But most of the time, if it's a long distance from the house, we're not there that long. We're not there long enough to do a full-blown investigation. So before we go out to those places, let's say the Stanley Hotel, for example, before we go out there, we do as much research that we can as far as finding on the internet, books. We don't just rely completely on the internet. We get books, we buy books from them. We kind of put together a game plan before we go out there, because we know we may only be there one night or even a few hours at that. Just try to get prepared. We do our homework basically before we go there. Then the second thing we try to do is when we're in that area or at a specific location, we try to find out if there are ghost tours that are available. Most cases there are, especially in big cities. Or, you know, like the Stanley Hotel, for example, when we went out there. We were in Denver for Marion's conference, and we took an extra day. The conference was over. So we had some time. We rented a car and drove up to Estes Park. Well, we were prepared. We did our homework ahead of time. And the day we were there, we pulled in, literally. We did a day historical tour at the Stanley. We did another radio show, Beyond the Edge, we were on. We did that segment. And then we did the ghost tour that night. And we did a little bit of investigation with some of the people that were on the tour that asked us to come to our rooms and check some stuff out. And by the time we were done, we were so exhausted, we just basically passed out. but that was like all day long, you know. But that's typically how it is when we travel and we're only there for a short period of time. Now, when there are locations like Hillview Manor that's close to us, or Madison Seminary, or, you know, like Gettysburg's only 4 hours or something like that, where we have the time that we could spend there, then we try to go in deep, or we try to rent out the location to do a full investigation or something like that, you know. So it just depends on time. But before we go out, we definitely want to try to do our homework, or maybe, you know, like look around and certain things that people didn't think of. Like the Stanley, for example, you hear people talk about Stanley Hotel, all that. Well, just up the street from there is the actual home that the Stanleys lived in. The hotel was actually a guest house. So little things like that we try to look for while we're there, because we don't really know if we're going to get back there.
Right. And then when we are there, we also ask, you know, people around.
Employees.
What have you guys heard? Have you had any experiences, anything like that as well?
Yeah, interviews.
That they can share anything that they have. Maybe it's something we hadn't heard of before.
That's a great resource, too, is the people who work at the locations or work at the, or even put on the ghost tours or stuff like that. And I keep going back to Gettysburg because we just got back from there. But the shop owners, we were talking to one guy for almost 2 hours. He was just going off, just telling us all kinds of stuff. I wish I would have had the recorder going. I had it in my pocket. I should have turned it on, but I didn't really. You know, once you just start questioning them, they just want to talk about it, so we just let them go, you know. So
yeah, right. Well, and it's amazing, actually, the public do wonderful things when you actually get out there. Part of what we do with Generation Truth is we cover the culture for a documentary, and we spend a lot of time doing things like that. It's an unattached tool I think a lot of investigators have forgotten about, is that your best tool is to talk to the public, to talk to the people around and to spend time with them, because you, like you said, if you don't, then you might miss something real quick. There's a lot of people that have stories, and everybody wants to tell their story.
Right. And then what I like to do then, after we hear those stories, if we haven't heard those things before, then we'll go back, maybe not before we do the investigation based on time, but sometimes we do, go back and look it up, see if we can find any historical ties that would lead to something that they said.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so our approach is something that's very similar to like marketing. You're never done. You always just get another piece of the puzzle and just keep going from there. And we have volumes and volumes of notebooks and binders and all kinds of stuff where we just keep going and going and going and going. And that's basically how we do it. You know, it'll probably never be done. And, you know, hopefully at some point we could take what we've done and turn it over to somebody and have them keep going with it.
Well, that's actually, I love the aspect that you're talking about. A lot of people should take the time to spend just building the research, because really, you know, we concentrate too much sometimes on the now, but reality is these are things that haven't been solved in over 80 years, so they're not going to be solved in our lifetimes. But we can hand down what we've learned to the next generation, and the next generation can hand down what they've learned. And hopefully somewhere along the line, there'll be a breakthrough where somebody says, hey, I've got something.
Right.
So that's actually a very good way of looking at it. It's an outstanding way of looking at it, actually. So you mentioned the Stanley, and you mentioned a couple other places. You've been to, like you said, 200 locations. What's the most memorable location you guys can think of?
Most memorable. Marianne, you got the better memory than I do.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, I think everybody has their own. Every location even has their own things that tie it to and make you remember it, draw you back to it again. One of my favorites is the Lizzie Borden house, because I have done a lot of research into Lizzie Borden. You know, I teach forensic science, and so I touch on that case in several different facets of the course. And so I had done a lot of research. I'd read the court transcripts. I've read several different books. And then when I went there, and they were giving the historical tour, the guy's like, hey, does anybody want to run upstairs and lay there on the floor where Abby was so that we can see coming up the stairs what it looks like? I'm like, me? And I like darted for those stairs. Nobody was getting there before me, you know. And so I knew like the positioning and everything. And I laid there and
actually
I got
kind
to
of freaked
out
the guy out a little bit. He was like, wait, how do you know she was laying like that? Wait a minute. Yeah.
So I mean, that's memorable for me when I get to go to a location that I've done so much historical information and studies on that I can then portray portions of it or replicate photos that were taken, et cetera. I love that. And that particular one, I adored that.
Yeah, I think she's right. I mean, to pinpoint like one location, it's more like it's the memories of certain things at locations.
Right.
You know, like for example, we were at the Queen Mary, mm-hmm. and we stayed on the Queen Mary for one night, and we woke up in the morning and what do they call that? That mist, that fog
that rolls in.
You couldn't see Long Island from the boat. It was just covered in fog. And that is just something, unless you experience, it's hard to explain, but it was awesome and eerie at the same time.
Like,
you know,
it's not hot yet. It's cool.
Yeah.
And it's all hazy and foggy and misty. And it just seems eerie, but it's daytime. So it's not. And it's,
yeah, it's like every location that we go to, like there's that. Just something that just, you know, we could remember that sticks out. And if we do have the luxury of going back and revisiting a location, it's like more that's added to it, you know. Mm-hmm. Like just recently, I'll tell you what, we stayed at the Farnsworth house. I told you we've been to Gettysburg three times now. All three times we stayed at least one night at the Farnsworth house. This last time we were on a group investigation in a room talking, and the shower came on and turned off by itself.
Yeah, it came
on. Wow. It was just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was like 12 seconds, and then it turned itself off again.
It was the most awesome experience.
And that room we had actually stayed in about 5 years ago. We stayed in that particular room.
And Chris, it's better yet. Listen to this. So in each room at the Farnsworth, they have a book that they allow, like a little notebook that they allow the guests to document if they had any experiences. So I mentioned right away, I said, you guys that were reading that book, did anybody report anything about the shower coming on? And the guy goes, yeah, that's in there like four or five times. I'm like, open that up real quick and see what time it was. And it was the same time. Four different occasions somebody reported that. See, stuff like that, that's just, you know, it's just mind-blowing, but it's cool at the same time. That's what we're looking for, is things like that.
Yeah, no, that'd be an amazing experience.
And then to try to historically figure out why would this happen at this time? Was there someone who would come home at that time? Like,
yeah.
Was that when they would be washing all the clothes? Or, you know what I mean? So it's interesting.
Yeah, that would be amazing to try to find a link to, because obviously it has to have something to do with the shower itself, whether it be washing clothes or washing themselves, or if it's happening at that time every day, one would think that you should be able to find a link somewhere.
It's not every day, but every few months or so, it seems, because I took some pictures of the pages in the little notebook, you know, saying, no, this happened.
Yeah,
we got
photographs of the notebook so that we could look at the date and try to put together a timeline or something.
Mm-hmm.
And with it being a shower, that would have been after, you know, later on. So maybe something happened in that room and somebody went in there clean up or something. You know, it's hard to say. And of course, a hotel or something like that that's public's not going to, you know.
It could be maybe somebody... somebody stayed there periodically and that was the time that he or she decided to take a shower when they were there. Maybe it was their favorite room.
Yeah,
exactly.
True. So that was a long answer to your question, but we have a tendency to do that.
Oh, no, it's a wonderful question. Listeners, you're listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality here on BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations here in America. So if you're deciding to do a podcast or digital radio station, I do encourage you to go with BBS. Go with the best. Donald is a great person. A few quick announcements before we jump back in and I introduce our guest once again. Excuse me, a bit of a cough. Generation Truth will be doing Ohio State Reformatory August 26th. There are still some tickets available. Tickets are running $86 per investigator. If you're interested in that, make sure to let us know. It's an overnight investigation. We will be starting it at 6 o'clock with a tour. We will have the Ohio State Reformatory team with us throughout the investigation. You do have the freedom of teams being broken up into several areas of the reformatory to do investigations on your own. And then we team back together for a brief pause to discuss all of the different situations that we've ran into throughout the night. So I encourage you to contact myself on Paranormal Truth and Reality or Christopher Houston on Facebook, and we can give you more details on that. We'd love to see you there. Outside of that, it looks like we do have a few interesting things coming up here. There is an actual conference coming up here in Columbus, Ohio for MUFON here shortly within the next couple of months. I encourage you to jump in there. If you're a spectator, they do allow spectators throughout the conference, but they won't allow you in some of the conference rooms. You can feel free to ask a couple of the scientists that are going to be there a little bit more about UFOs if you're encouraged to do so. We are on Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm speaking with Sean and Marianne Donnelly. They have PANICD, PANICD.com, which is a database and a YouTube series called Our Haunted Travels that I encourage you to actually look them up a little bit on. There will be some links on my Facebook page as well as my website, Paranormal Truth and Reality. And we have been talking about their many, many experiences, so I hope you tune in for the remainder of the show as we continue. So I know we talked about several of the locations. We talked a lot of things, but let's get into the nitty-gritty a little bit about some of the tools you use on your investigations, guys. I know everybody is a little bit different on their styles, their methods, what they like to use, what they don't like to use. What are the most common things that you guys use outside of your wits, obviously, and, of course, a notebook, which is very useful? What are some of the tools that you use as a trade, so to speak?
Well, our number one tool is our digital recorders. You know, we always have those going, whether we're even on a day tour, investigation, whatever, we record everything audio. And that's where we get most of our evidence, too, is EVP. We also have EMF meters. Like I said, I'm in the IT field, so I kind of understand electromagnetic fields, how it works and that kind of stuff, and know how to use it and check to make sure that there's nothing interfering, things like that. So we got K2 meters, MEL meters, you know, things like that. But we also use, Marianne likes to use the Ovilus. Mm-hmm. And we do use SB7 or SB11. She hates those because of the noise.
I can't stand the white noise sound.
Yeah.
So that's why I like the Ovilus better.
Yeah. But what we tend to stay away from, and I'm not bashing use of it or anything like that, it's just our personal, we stay away from. We don't really use dowsing rods or Ouija boards because we think it could be, you know, easily
manipulated
by humans, the person using them, you know. So we just don't use them.
You know, we all have this natural energy in our body. Biologically, your muscles are twitching, whether you think they are or not. And it's just, I am very skeptical of the, you know, responses that you get through.
Not that we're discounting them. We've seen other people use them and things like that, and they get great stuff, but we just don't.
Yeah.
And it depends too, like when we're on an investigation, like I might pull off the spirit box and nothing's working. I might pull off K2, nothing's working. So I'll try for a little while or try things. The digital recorders are always going. And, you know, if something doesn't work, okay, I'll, you know, let's try this. Or, you know, okay, spirits, let's see if this will work better. Or, you know, so it's not like we pull them all out at once. We just kind of, until we get something that is working, and then we try to stick with it, you know, so. That's basically our approach while we're on an investigation.
Well, electronic voice phenomena actually is one of the bases, though sometimes it can be explained. Being from an audio background, EVP itself actually fascinates me. I'm not much on the Ovilus and the cycle through devices, but that's because I've been in audio for so long that when I do a lot of my teaching and my conferences, I tell people you really have to be very, very cautious there, but I can certainly understand, you know, each individual instrument, the easiest way to explain it, gives different results to different investigators. And no matter what you use, it's okay to use those. But scientifically speaking, I can relate with you on the Ouija boards. It's very easy to misunderstand and manipulate a Ouija board, especially when we did our test subjects. And I've actually experienced about 2,500 to 2,800 Ouija boards. Every time I say that, somebody goes, "Well, why aren't you in contact with the devil yet?" Because I did it scientifically speaking, and scientifically speaking, we got no responses that would indicate that a ghost was talking at all. You know, so I can definitely understand what you're talking about.
It's kind of like the same. I guess here's a better explanation, like the ovilus, okay? The ovilus device, you turn it on, it's because it's randomly just spit out words that don't make sense about anything. But when you're having, I guess it's like an EVP session using the ovilus where you're asking questions, or if you're in a situation or an area and those words coming across relate to that moment or conversation, then that we say, okay, this could be potential evidence. Here's a prime example. We were on the battlefield and we had the ovilus on and we were talking about one of the generals and everything, and it came across on the ovilus. It said southern coffin. You know, so those words related to the conversation that we were having. You see what I'm saying? It wasn't just random, like, you know, pull, you know, blue.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like that relates to that conversation. And that's the same way too with the SB7 or spirit boxes. You know, a lot of people use them to, you know, what's your name, that kind of stuff. But we kind of use conversations and discussions or trying to go back into those specific time periods or something like that to see if we get responses. So that's the methods that we use. And if it relates, then we'll set that aside and say this could be potential evidence.
Well, it makes sense totally. And if you're going to use those devices, you kind of have to do it that way. And I have seen some unique, it's rare, but I have seen some unique responses on there, including carrying on a conversation at one point while I was observing with an investigator that was very interesting. So I won't rule them out. It's just like, you know, any field. I'm in the audio field, so I'm skeptical of a lot of different things, and I'm not skeptical on some things because of that as well. But I will say that both devices, the SB7 and the Ovilus, can come up with question marks if you know how to use them. And like you said, it's kind of going past the average sentence, past the average word. You know, you have to be able to identify and go, okay, well, this is not coincidence anymore. This is literally carrying on a conversation, as you said, that shouldn't be there, if that makes sense.
And we've experienced that before during an investigation with SB7. Like, it was conversation going on. Plus, we were, okay, the SB7 was running backwards, okay? Plus, the conversation, we were getting swearing. You know, and I'm like, okay, this is like a whole different ball game. We got to, you know, make sure we're getting recordings of this, you know. So, you know, it's just, and then once you get into, and you know too what I'm saying, is once you get into the mode of the investigation, and you can feel that conversation is going on, then, you know, but it doesn't last very long, you know, because it's, you know, we believe the spirits, it takes a lot of energy for them to communicate. So, you know, you just, those precious moments that you capture, we just set it aside. And we don't say it's evidence. We say it's potential evidence. What do you think? You know, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I use the term a lot of times. Of course, that's probably because of the backgrounds that I've worked with. I use it as I like to say it's collected data. If you can collect enough data that corresponds, if you've got three or four conversations, I've got three or four conversations, and 12 other investigators have three or four conversations at the same locations, and they're picking up the same type of things, then that's beyond coincidence. That's
see,
data
that's
that says there's something there.
That is what the database is, the panicd.com. It's the word panic, then D.
For database, .com.
That's the purpose of it, is I can link to other people's evidence. So what we list in there is the general demographics of the location, where it's at, whether it's open to the public, and a picture of it. Then we list the history, any ghost stories or folklore that we find, links to evidence on that we find to it, but also the paranormal claims. And then if I find where I have other paranormal investigators send me stuff, I'll link to it, because exactly what you just said. Say, you know, group A, group B, group C, all the way down, went to that same location and got that same type of evidence. If you could bring that screen up and look at that, that starts to get real interesting real quick, you know? So that was the point of the PanicD.com database.
Well, I think it's brilliant, actually. I think more more people should do it. I think that, you know, personally speaking, watching the paranormal field currently, it's a small resemblance of the way it used to be. And if there were more people like yourselves with a database and cooperating with each other and collecting the data needed, it would open new doors and it would close other doors too. It would answer a lot of questions. We just need to all work together in order to do that. So, you know, I think it's fascinating when I get a chance to have a team like yourself that's really what you're working for and the goal there. If people give you the data, you have the data in there, and all the data adds up, then you have an open question mark. You have an anomaly that you can investigate further. And that's really that's the heart of paranormal study. You know, I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, and that's getting back to the very beginning of our conversation. That's the addiction, is like putting all that together, just saying, wow, you know, because we all hear different bits and pieces about history or different stories, or, you know, you might get turned on to something just because you heard of some folklore or something like that. But then when you look, it's like, where did that start? Why did that start? Why are people saying that? There's some sort of truth for the origination of it. It wasn't just somebody just sitting around saying, hey, I'll watch these people, you know, I'm going to make this story up. Like Crybaby Bridge. You know, I've talked to so many people, don't I? So many people, yeah, that'll argue with me. Oh, no, Crybaby Bridge is in Virginia. Oh, no, it's over here in Texas. Oh, no, it's here. You know what? There's Crybaby Bridges all over
everywhere.
The United States, because that same story originated somewhere, and some traveling salesman or something just passed it around the community to community or something like that. Where did it begin? You know, so that's the stuff that really intrigues us. It, you know, something similar to that. Now, you know, and that's actually why we do it. You know, because it's fun for us. You know.
Well, there's a lot of urban myths that are that way. Crybaby Bridge, the hanging tree. I think every state has at least one hanging tree, and one story that goes along with it.
Yeah.
You know, I could name dozens of them that I've even collected in my own research, because it's fascinating to dig into that stuff. It really is. In fact, my first research paper, believe it or not, was on the Mothman, because the myth of the Mothman is an amazing thing once you get a chance to sit down and talk to the culture and the people. And it mm-hmm. surprises me how far that spanned from one location. Now there are claims all over the world.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. Crazy.
It's fascinating, though.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's go ahead.
What's really fun is, you know, being that we're in education, it's when our peers at work, you know, they're like, I can't believe you guys go out and do that stuff. I can't believe you, you know, whatever. And then once they know we've gone out and done an investigation or went on a trip or whatever, the next first question when we go back, well, did you see anything? Did you find anything? Did you, you know?
There's that natural curiosity. You
yeah,
know?
But they don't want anything to do with it. You know,
right.
It's just.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be the skeptic with the best of them, but I want more data. I want to be able to collect more information. I want to have enough to say there's something there. But other people, they're just naturally curious and they want to know if you found anything.
Yeah.
Well, that branches it branches from simple education all the way up to some of the state universities and so forth. I don't know how many times, because I've befriended a lot of college professors throughout the years, and I don't know how many times they take a twofold. Now, they'll stand back here in the background, but then you'll always hit something they're fascinated with, and somewhere along the line they'll come back and go, did you get anything? What do you think about this? Because it is a fascinating subject. And like you said, you touch base very early on something that is very true. The paranormal, a lot of times people relate it with just ghosts, but the paranormal in its simplest term means unknown by the scientific community at the moment. that means that virtually everything revolves around the unknown, and virtually all of us touch base in the paranormal somewhere along the line. I actually have just did a seminar about that because, believe it or not, if you technically use the real term for the paranormal, which is the unknown, when you're dealing with how we created the atom bomb, well, you were dealing with the paranormal. Nobody knew exactly what was going on. They were working with calculations to try to create a bomb. They had found out they couldn't create the bomb, and somebody accidentally stumbled across it, and it went kaboom. It was all unknown science.
Things that are unexplained at that time or can't be figured out, and eventually sometimes you can.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And then that opens up doors to new questions because you found that answer, but 20 other questions opened up during that process. Well, gee, I did this. Well, how did I do this? Well, what are the circumstances of doing this? What other things could happen because of doing this? All kinds of questions open up. that's the beauty of the paranormal. It's a never-ending process.
That's right. It's like working for the post office. You always got to deliver the mail. You always got to keep working at it.
It's going to keep coming, and you got to keep distributing and going through it.
Yeah.
Well, there's always always something to learn from it too. That's the thing I think a lot of people don't understand as well, is there are so many facets to the paranormal, and there are so many fields that come into those from the average fields, electronic engineering, photography, audio engineering, you name it, all the way to the more in-depth things like Marianne, you deal with forensic science. Well, forensic science and criminal investigation touch base into paranormal in one way, shape, or form if you learn how to use it. Geology, archaeology, there are so many different fields, and you can never learn all of them even if you want to.
No.
Right. That's one of my problems, is I will get stuck on a topic, and I will work on it until somebody brings something else up and distracts me to something different.
Yeah,
and then I'll be like, okay, I'll work on that one. And I keep going on that one. And then I forget about the other one. And then I'm like, oh, you know what?
Yeah, it's really cool when we're working on, in most cases we do as a team, we work on the same thing. It's really cool. But it really gets ugly when we're both working on two separate things. You know, it's like, will you please shut that up? I'm trying to listen to what this is saying over here. I think that was last night's argument, wasn't it?
Yes, yes it was.
Well, I'm trying to listen to this, too. Go get your headphones.
So now, how long have you guys been doing your YouTube channel so far?
Well, we started the PanicV.com database in 2010. That was around that time when Marianne told you about that St. Augustine trip. And that's when we started the channel. We created it. We created all the social media around PanicV.com. Because, and the reason, the name PanicV actually stands for Paranormal Activity Network Information Center Database, PanicV. It's an acronym. So, you know, back then in 2010, you wanted to get a website with the shortest domain name possible. So we just went around and created all the social media and YouTube channel. We created it. But I think I had like 2 videos out there and 22 subscribers since 2010 to November of 2017. And that's when, well, it was about, maybe about October, I was talking to Marianne, and I'm like, man, we have so much stuff. We're going to so many great places and all this, and I'm starting to get older, starting to forget some of these things. Maybe we went out and look at doing YouTube and, you know, maybe trying to put these down in books and things like that. And we were doing the Haunted Spotlight with Eric Altman on BTE Radio, where it was like a 15-minute segment where it was just real quick. We would just pick a location and go over stuff real quick.
History and some of the claims.
Yeah, history and claims. And I thought, well, let's expand it a little bit and talk about, you know, our experiences when we were there, why we believe that the place is haunted and that kind of thing. And we put together the first book. It's out there already, the St. Augustine book, when it started. And we started the YouTube channel in November of 2017. with our trip to Springfield, right?
Yeah.
So each week we feature a different location that we've been to. And we, you know, there's separate videos that go out. Like there's one that we have a mascot. He's our parapeeps or our followers on YouTube. They named him Boris. So he's like a skeleton. And he narrates the ghost stories and folklore with this accent. And that talks about the stories and paranormal claims. And then like in the middle of the week, we have some little auxiliary video that kind of goes with something. And then on Friday, we do the location video where we tie it all together and talk about our experiences and why it's haunted. And then on Saturday, every Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern, we go live and we just do something and have fun on there. And it kind of wraps up the week and starts the next week. So we've been doing it now since November, and we've been keeping up with it. But it has a tendency to get a little taxing. Sometimes
it takes a lot of work to put together good production. I know that I'm on a time frame with our work, and I had to take some setbacks because we got attention on a level I wasn't expecting. But I know it. I was new coming in. I had a video producer. I had everything put together, but I'm learning very, very quickly to put together good production, to get your B-roll, to be able to get your locations, to have the right equipment, to film everything, and to sit back and review evidence. That's a full-time job.
Yeah. And we have full-time jobs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And there has been a couple occasions, like we've had audio. We still have, you know, months and months and months of audio stuff that we haven't reviewed yet. I went live like late at night and dumped it, you know, just put the raw stuff out there and let people just listen to it and then comment on there if they hear or see anything. I call it a virtual ghost hunt, you know, so it helps, it allows other people to help us, you know, hey, check out at 1210. We heard something. Or, you know, and I could go back
and listen to it
or see or something like that. So we've done that a few times too.
But yeah, reviewing is, it's
real
horrible.
Time. Yeah.
It's real time, you know. And we usually each have a digital recorder running. So every hour that we're at a location, we have 2 hours just in audio.
At least.
And then sometimes there's too. Video and it gets real big real fast.
Yeah.
It's a tedious task. I know that that's after I did the interviews, that's where I ended up, was a lot of audio review and video review. And it's a tedious task. It really is. You spend hours and hours and hours. I have a little dungeon, and I'll bet you sometimes I've done 12 to 14 hour days just sitting listening to audio recordings to make sure I got them out to teams properly. And It can really get to you when you're sitting there with your little headset and you're listening and you're pumping it through your machine and you got to go over it over and over and over again, and then you add that on top of the video. It's a handful. It's worth it though, mm-hmm. if you catch one good thing.
Yeah,
because you get real excited. You're like, hey, listen to this. What do you think about this? And it wakes you back up because after you're going for a while, it's like, oh, okay, I heard this. I remember this conversation. Okay. And then you hear something, you're like, okay, I'm up. I'm listening. Let me rewind that again.
See, Marianne has her recorder going all the time, like nonstop, but she'll just keep recording no matter what. Me, I've kind of learned, you know, well, recently, probably within the last 3-4 years, I just do sessions online, you know, 10-15 minute sessions, because to keep both of them going the whole time, it's too much. And like here, like you said, if you find something though, it's worth it. Like at the Stanley, when we were at the Stanley, and we have a theory too, like if it's too busy and, you know, that kind of stuff, it's hard to, well, it's just hard to catch their hear stuff anyways. But there was a couple that was on the tour and they asked us to come back to their room, that the girl was a little bit shaken up about some of the claims that were in the room. So we went back and we just did a session, you know, just kind of, you know, appease them a little bit and let them know everything's okay. And I never really do this on location, maybe 3 times total I've ever done this, where I played back the recording just to say, okay, everything's okay. We're going to play this back now. And that's the only EVP that we caught at the Stanley Hotel. It was that one right there.
Yeah. Of course, I could have missed some too. Because,
well, yeah, you haven't listened to all of your audio.
Well, not to mention the fact that I didn't have my audio recorder for the one session that I did. So here's a quick story, okay? So we told you that we did all those tours and everything back to back, and we did an investigation in one of the people's rooms, and so it was like almost 1 o'clock in the morning. And we're like, you know what? We still haven't brought our luggage in yet. So we're going to go down. We're going to go get our luggage. So we went down. We went to the elevator. We're waiting for the elevator. The elevator opens up, and it's these two girls that come out of the elevator. And they are going into the most haunted room in the hotel.
Lord Dunraven.
Dunraven's room 401. And they look at us, and we, of course, had on our shirts for Panic D. And they're like, Would one of you like to come in our room and like just check things out for us? Because
this
I don't
was
know.
A different
it's
couple.
Just, yeah. I don't know, but you guys look like you know what you're doing. And they told us all kinds of weird stuff about our room. And I'm like, I'm jumping at the chance to go into that room, right? So I like immediately went. I'm glad he was with me, because otherwise I'd have just been going into some stranger's room, you know, just because it was 401. So I go in there and they're like, yeah, this closet. I'm like, oh, yeah, the closet's supposed to have, you know, things. And so I like went into their closet, closed the door behind me, and started a session.
Yeah, she started an EVP session. The only thing is,
I didn't have my audio. Yeah. I had nothing, because we were on our way downstairs just to get our luggage. Like, we weren't planning on investigating or anything. So I was literally doing an EVP session in the closet
with no recorder.
So I don't know if Lord Dunraven told me anything or not, but. Yeah. He didn't tell it to me so that I could hear it with my natural ears.
She's in there asking questions. It's like an EVP session, right? And I'm standing there, and I'm like, wait a minute. Marianne, when did you get your recorder? She goes, oh.
Whoops.
It's me. Yeah. So that was funny. Yeah. But the girls, they thought we were, like, totally weird, because I literally jumped into the closet and started talking.
Yeah,
like,
no problem.
Who's she talking to? Like, I can hear them talking to him out in the main room. So I was able to hear what their conversation was, and they were just like, seriously, who is she talking to?
Oh, you know, and I remember too, and I think we have this, I'm pretty sure, well, maybe I don't have it on video, but after you did get the recorder, you grabbed the K2 meter.
Yes.
There's a rocking chair in that room. It's not around any type of electrical outlets, anything like that. And the right arm of the rocking chair, the K2 was going off all over it. So there's something with that rocking chair that's actually in that room.
But and just that. But just that one handle. It
yep,
wasn't
just
any
that
other
one
part
handle.
Of it or anything. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's take the last couple of minutes here, guys, and we'll just go over your website again and any links to your books or anything that you want to share so that the listeners can figure out where to find you.
Well, our website is very simple. It's panicd.com. It's the letters, PANICD.com. That is our website. And then on YouTube, we are Panic D Videos. So you can find us on there. Off of our website and off of our YouTube, all of our videos, everything like that. We have links to all of our social media, our books, all that stuff. And we're on Amazon and Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all over. So that's the easiest way.
Well, you have been listening, listeners, to Sean and Marianne Donnelly. Very, very wonderful bunch of people here, and they have a YouTube show called Our Haunted Travels. I encourage you to actually look up. You've been listening on Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm Christopher Houston, your host with PBS Radio. Next week, I was going to do it this week, but I had scheduled Sean and Marianne Donnelly, and I wanted to make sure that they did get on. We are going to have our infamously famous Let's Think About This with Christopher Houston and Paranormal Truth and Reality about every 3 months, guys, just so that you know. We do a little piece where I go over all the haunted history in Ohio, all of the seminars, and talk just kind of science and basics. I will end this the way I end it every single week in the paranormal. As you're learning from talking to two very interesting investigators that are very educated and go out and do this on a regular basis, and the paranormal truth should always be that reality. And that reality changes just a little bit with each individual investigator, but our goals are all the same, and that is collecting the data and looking for the answers. So make sure when you're out there to ask the investigators, make sure that you go past the thrill seeking. If you're truly interested in the science and the paranormal study, learn from everybody and try to develop your own way of doing things. We'll let you off of here. It's been a wonderful show. I appreciate you guys coming on, and we'll talk to listeners next week. Enjoy your weekend.